Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Who doesn't remember a favorite casserole from their youth? But when's the last time you made a casserole? Cooking teacher, syndicated columnist, PBS host, and cookbook author for two decades, Betty Rossbottom has written a new book to cover that category. It's called Sunday Casseroles, Complete Comfort in One Dish. Betty Rossbottom is well known in Columbus foodie circles for founding La Belle Palme Cooking School. She continued to teach when she moved to New England in the 1990s. Today, she directs the classes at the Different Drummers Kitchen in Northampton, Massachusetts. Welcome back to the show, Betty Rossbottom.
Thank you so much, Anne. I'm pleased to be here. It's great to hear you and all those other Columbus voices.
So let's talk about what constitutes a casserole. Is it the same old thing we've always thought of, or are there twists?
Well, you know, I think that a casserole is cooking in a single dish. I did a lot of research before I did this book, and everything from a stew that's baked like a dough à la Provençale in a single dish with all the ingredients is a casserole. Mac and cheese is a casserole. And, you know, that very familiar tuna noodle casserole is one, too. So the idea is to put your meal or your side dish in one dish, put it in the oven, bake it for the required time, pull it out, and have a great meal.
You organized the book in chapters, and I want to talk about that. But you did something that I really like that I always like about, say, Bon Appetit magazine, is you have the casserole directory in the back. I really like that.
You know, I think that's a really useful tool today. People are busy. And if you look in the casserole directory, you can find out which casseroles might have lower calories, which ones cost less money, which ones you can expect to spend a little more time on, and even which ones might work well for holidays. So it's just a quick look to give readers, you know, information that might be real useful to them.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment for Betty Rossbottom, you can give us a call, or we'd love to hear from you if you want to talk about what your favorite casserole was growing up. And maybe Betty can talk about how she's amplified that or amended that or tweaked it for her book today. The name of the book is called Sunday Casseroles, Complete Comfort in One Dish. The number to call is 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So let's talk about how you organized the chapters. What thought went into that?
Oh, many thoughts, and it took a long time. I couldn't figure out, did I want to do them by time scale? You know, the casserole's under an hour, casserole's for 2 hours. In the end, I decided that people would probably get more use if I organize them by ingredient. So there's chicken and turkey, the poultry chapter. There are meats, which include that pork dish that was mentioned earlier with the cider and the apples and the red cabbage. Mm-hmm. There's even a seafood casserole chapter. There's one that's dedicated to vegetables. One of my favorite chapters is called kind of sneakily Casseroles Undercover, and they're casseroles that are baked under biscuits or pastry toppings or cornbread. And there's, of course, a pasta chapter and another unexpected one, breakfast casseroles. Mm-hmm. And once I had that laid out, it was pretty easy then to figure out what dishes would go where.
I love the breakfast casserole section. I like did almost a fist pump when I saw that you had done that, because that alone makes the book a keeper, in my opinion. I almost made the croissant ham and mustard gratin for a girls' weekend last month, but then we just ate all the croissants. So.
I use it. Actually, that casserole was devised to take up, when I go to Paris, leftover croissants that get dry but are perfect when they're dried out in this casserole.
And you want them to be a little dried out, right?
Absolutely, yes, because they're going to have a wonderful sauce that's over them with some Gruyere and mustard. And so the drier they are, the more they stand up under the heat.
How did you research for this book? Were you just saving up recipes over the years and compiled them? I know it's a little more complicated than that, but what I guess the first question is, what inspired you to do it? And then how did you proceed to collect the recipes?
Well, the inspiration came from Chronicle Books, which is my publisher. I've done three other books in a Sunday series, Sunday Soup, Sunday Brunch, and Sunday Roast. And my editor called one day about 2 years ago and said, we have a new idea, Sunday Casseroles. And I immediately jumped on it because I love casseroles, and I didn't think that there was something out there that was really as contemporary as I would like to do. And once that happened, I wish that I could say that I had just a whole repertoire of casserole recipes, but the truth was I didn't. And so this book took quite a bit of research and work to figure out what could indeed become a casserole. I looked at cuisines around the world because many of them, in fact, most of them, have a casserole that's significant to their culture. In France, we have cassoulet, mm-hmm. we have daube de bœuf à la Provençale, which I mentioned earlier. You do Southwest Mexican style casseroles that include tortillas. Even the English have cottage pies, which are considered, quote, casseroles. So I did a lot of research on ethnic cuisines. I looked through countless cookbooks, and one of my discoveries was that books today, cookbooks today, often go, if you look at the index, from carrots to caviar. There's no casserole in between. So it was a wake-up call for me to look at beautiful food combinations, flavor profiles, and see if I could make them into a really doable casserole for people to cook on a weekly or on a Sunday special occasion.
Did you wind up with a lot more recipes than you expected? Did you have to edit?
I did not wind up with a lot more. Down to the line of this finish time for this book, I was still developing and creating. And I think that's because the editor who gave me this commission to do this book gave me only one caveat. And he said, Betty, if you do anything with this book, I want you to make every single one of those recipes special. I want people to love the flavors. I want them to feel that if it's a traditional recipe, you've given it a twist, mm-hmm. or that you've given them something completely new to think about. So it took a lot of time.
There's 60 recipes in the book.
That's right.
And how many of them would you say, I probably should have counted it up myself, but how many would you say are twists on traditionals?
Well, I can think right off the top of my head of mac and cheese. Mm-hmm. You know,
and you have three recipes for that.
Yeah, I have three. I have the traditional one, but my little twist on it, instead of doing a traditional cheese sauce, you know, white sauce with cheese added, is I added some creme fraiche. And that little tang of the creme fraiche with its acidity really gives this casserole a new taste. Then I did a variation with lobster, a variation with some sausage and mustard, and a variation with some peas and pancetta for spring. Other casseroles that you might say, you know, have been around, I did a riff on what we might call succotash, you know, not that succotash itself is a casserole, but in the chicken chapter, I did chicken and I did corn and lima beans bound together, baked together in a casserole. And that to me was something that was traditional that we took and made into a casserole. So, you know, there are all kinds of dishes that fall under this category. I did chicken pot pies, and my twist on those was I ate many Swanson's chicken pot pies, and to this day I can remember the carton cover. But this chicken pot pie in Sunday casseroles is made with not only chicken, but with mushrooms, Brussels sprouts, ooh, butternut squash. There's cheese in the crust that covers it. Mm. So what I've done is take a classic idea but try to enhance it and give it a fresh look for the 21st century.
Some of your casserole tips and guidelines deal with some pretty basic issues, such as how to clean the cutting board after slicing or dicing raw meat. Now,
yes,
obviously this is important, but not necessarily something I see in every cookbook that involves using raw meat. So why did you include that with this book?
Well, so many of the recipes in this book start with raw meat. There, in the chicken chapter, there is poultry, whether it's chicken breast, chicken thighs, whether it's turkey. And you're cutting it often into cubes, or you're cutting a breast maybe in half so you have thinner breast slices. And when that raw meat comes in contact with a cutting board, whether it's plastic or wood, you really need to clean it carefully. You need to soap it up really well, and you need to put some kind of acid on it to kill the germs so you don't get salmonella. The acid can be anything as inexpensive as your bottle of white or cider vinegar, or it can be a leftover cut lime or lemon. But I felt it was important enough because lots of the recipes in the book call for uncooked meat that you're cutting.
And it sounds like maybe you're aiming this book at a very broad audience that includes beginning cookers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is cooker
the every right time, word? Every time I write a cookbook, my aim is not a narrow focus, but it's because of all the years I taught and I met so many people when I lived in Columbus at my cooking school. I found that the degree of skills was varying from one person to another. We might have a 20-year-old college student in one class and down the row an 80-year-old grandmother. Mm-hmm. And their experience would be different. So I always err on the side of giving more direction rather than less. I've used as my role model throughout my career Julia Child, who never thought you could say too much in a recipe's directions. But on the other hand, I felt that I learned to cook because of her wonderful recipes. So my aspiration is always to give enough information so that whether you're a beginner or an experienced cook, you'll come out with a good dish.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. More of this conversation with Betty Rossbottom about her new book. It's called Sunday Casseroles, Complete Comfort in One Dish, still to come. But first, All Things Considered host Marilyn Smith and WOSU restaurant reviewer Rich Terapak are here for an update on our fall membership drive. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guest is Betty Rossbottom, and our topic today is the casserole. Cooking teacher, syndicated columnist, PBS host, and cookbook author for two decades, Betty Rossbottom has written a new book to cover that category of casseroles. The book is called Sunday Casseroles, Complete Comfort in One Dish. We'd love to hear from our listeners today about what their favorite casserole is. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Betty Rossbottom, over the course of your cooking career and teaching career, the access to fresh foods and food variety has just exploded. And cooking shows and cooking schools are everywhere, and yet it seems like more people every year fall by the wayside in the kitchen. What do you make of that?
Well, I think everybody's terribly busy. I think there's usually more than one person working in a household, so that doesn't leave a lot of time when you get home from your jobs to do the work. But one of the good things about casseroles is you can make them ahead and freeze them and then defrost them. And in this book, as you pointed out in the directory, there's some recipes that you can whip up in pretty fast order. One of my favorite recipes in this book came from my son, Mike, whom Rich Terapak just mentioned. He lives in Boston, has a family, two young children, and he said, Mom, I'm going to give you this recipe. You're going to love it. And you know you can make it in 20 minutes, put it in the oven for 25, and it's healthy. And it's just you put a lot of spinach, fresh spinach, on the bottom of a casserole dish. You put some sliced olives, some cherry tomatoes that are sliced. You put some lemon juice and olive oil over it. You put some chickpeas in there if you want. And then you put white fish fillets. Up here in New England, I use cod. I put a little bit more lemon, salt, and pepper, and olive oil. Breadcrumbs, pop it in the oven, not a long time because it's fish. Pull it out. The spinach has wilted. That wonderful Mediterranean flavoring of the olives and the tomatoes and also some garlic, which I forgot to mention, has melded together. And, you know, it's healthy. It's good. And almost in the time you could call a takeout, you know, a restaurant for takeout, you can make this casserole. So I think that everybody who's in the food world today is encouraging people who come to their cooking classes, who read their columns or use their cookbooks, to turn back to fresh food because it's healthier for you. It's a better price when you use it in season, and it just tastes better all around.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Betty Rossbottom is a cooking teacher, syndicated columnist, PBS host, and the author of Sunday casseroles, complete comfort in one dish. If you have a question or comment for Betty, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about the role of the humble breadcrumb. Why do they I keep frozen breadcrumbs in the freezer. It's one of those things you can make ahead. You said if someone's going to go to the point of toasting them in olive oil or unsalted butter on the stove, that they only keep for about a week. I keep them untoasted in the freezer for a long time, and they work really well. But its role in the casserole is sustained.
Well, what I think you can do it either way. I buy a lot of great artisan bread. We have great farmers markets in my area and wonderful bakeries, but I don't always use it up. And the smart thing to do is to break it into chunks, put it in your food processor, and make it into breadcrumbs. And at that point, you absolutely can kind of double bag it, put it in your freezer, label it, put the date on it, mm-hmm. and pull it out when you need it. What I like to do for casseroles is to take those breadcrumbs, whether they're frozen and defrosted or made fresh, and put them just in a very small amount of either olive oil or butter, depending on the recipe, and toss them for less than 5 minutes. A cup will take you less than 5 minutes to toss. They taste fabulous, and in my mind, they are just so much better than those that come in a cardboard box. You know,
absolutely.
And it's not wasteful. It's good for the environment as well.
Exactly. We have a Facebook message from Emmy, who writes, "My favorite casserole growing up was my mom's chicken and stuffing casserole. Unfortunately, looking back, I realized she used cream of chicken soup, stuffing mix, and other salt-laden ingredients to make it. Is there a healthier, more homemade version of this casserole your guests could recommend?" And actually, there is, right?
Well, which one are you thinking of?
The turkey, in one of your turkey, I guess one of the things.
The turkey shepherd's pie?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, yeah.
Okay, it's not quite the same.
No.
But after Thanksgiving, I wanted people to have an option for a casserole. And you can take leftover turkey, and then I take some little the pearl onions that you don't have to peel yourself. You can buy those frozen from Birdseye. I saute those in some butter, add a little bit of flour, add some leftover stock from the Thanksgiving bird or some leftover gravy, and I put a little bit of orange and I put a little bit of dried cranberries mm-hmm. in it, and I pour it over the turkey. And then many of you will have leftover, if you're lucky, whipped potatoes. I put that on top. But what I was thinking about for Emmy, who called, is that I know what recipe she's talking about. Usually it's Pepperidge Farm stuffing, and it's chicken or turkey, and it's cream of chicken soup. And what I would recommend instead of the cream of chicken soup is making a white sauce. And there are many white sauces in this book. You just look up sauce and white and you'll find it. You can make it by starting with a couple of tablespoons of butter, a couple of tablespoons of flour, which you cook together for a couple of minutes. It's easy. Then add 1.5 to 2 cups of either milk, or in this case, I would add half milk and half chicken stock to get that flavor she wants. And she could add some seasonings into that, some thyme, you know, some dried thyme, a little bit of rosemary. And she could, you know, use the stuffing that she had left over from Thanksgiving, or she could buy a stuffing. She could bind it with that particular sauce and put her cooked pieces of chicken or turkey in it, and it would be healthier, and I think it would still taste really good.
Boy, does that sound good. Thanks, Emmy, for that email. If anyone else wants to email us, the address is allsides@wosu.org. Rick in Grandview, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Betty. Can you say anything about the French cassoulet?
Absolutely. The recipe that's in this book or cassoulet in general?
Oh, in general, everything.
Okay.
Anything.
Well, that's great. Cassoulet is a favorite dish in the southwestern part of France. And it's the area of France where they use duck and sausages and white beans. And normally, if you make a classic French cassoulet, it'll take you 2 or 3 days of marathon cooking. Most often it has duck. It sometimes can have lamb. It has sausages, often Toulouse sausages. And I wanted to have cassoulet in my book, but I didn't want it to take 2 to 3 days. And fortunately for me, a young French-American friend told me that he had been making cassoulet the easy way. And that's the recipe that's in my book. In place of duck, which is sometimes hard to find, I use chicken thighs, and they're sautéed. And I use a good smoked sausage like kielbasa. I use white beans. I do use white beans that are canned rather than starting from scratch, but you rinse all the salt off. And then I add tomatoes and wonderful seasonings. I nestle those chicken breasts and the sausage in this wonderful mélange of beans, and they cook in the oven until everything, all the liquids, have kind of absorbed and there's a crust on the top. And from beginning to end, it's only about 2 hours. So I think that's better than 2 days or 3 days. And I think you will love it as the days get colder, and especially as the winter gets here, and your body just wants robust food. It's a really delicious dish to use.
Rick, thanks for that call. For everybody else, if you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Betty, is that the sort of recipe that you could maybe make ahead in the morning, assemble it in the morning?
Not only could you make it ahead in the morning, you can make it ahead a day or two in advance.
Because not all of them can you do that with, but many of them you can.
And I indicate there's a sidebar that gives real practical information, like how long it takes to prep the recipe, how long it takes from start to finish, and if you can make it ahead. And that particular dish, the cassoulet, gets even better when you let it sit because the flavors meld.
An email from Cheryl. She writes, "My sister is pregnant with her third, and we are having a stock the freezer shower for her." Isn't that great?
That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah. What casseroles freeze and reheat the best?
Well, there are many casseroles. Pasta casseroles, for example, freeze really beautifully. And in each of my recipes, I tell you if they can or cannot be frozen. Sometimes you can freeze them, but I just don't think the results are as good. So all the ones that I recommend that you freeze, I've tested myself. One that comes to mind is really an old La Belle Pomme favorite, a dish I created when I lived in Ohio. It appeared in Bon Appetit on the cover back in the 1990s. And it's called rigatoni with spicy tomato sauce, two cheeses, and olives. I have it frozen in my refrigerator almost all the time. It's my go-to dish when my husband invites his freshman students over. I take it to neighbors when they've had maybe a baby or, when they're in need of something. And I think it would be just great for her refrigerator casseroles.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with cookbook author and teacher Betty Rossbottom about her new book, Sunday Casseroles, Complete Comfort in One Dish. More of my conversation about Sunday casseroles with Betty Rossbottom is still to come. But first, here's WOSU restaurant reviewer Rich Terapak and All Things Considered host Marilyn Smith to talk about supporting 89.7 NPR News right now. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guest is Betty Rossbottom, and our topic today is the casserole. Cooking teacher, syndicated columnist, PBS host, and cookbook author for 2 decades, Betty Rossbottom has written a new book to cover that category. The book is called Sunday Casseroles, Complete Comfort in One Dish. If you have a question or comment for Betty, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My favorite part of any cookbook show, Betty Rossbottom, is getting the calls from the listeners and hearing what they have to say. I mean, I could ask you a million questions. I love to cook, but I love getting some input from the listeners, too. And I don't know. I mean, as a teacher, what have you learned from your students over the years?
Everything. They are the reason I write cookbooks. They're wonderful. And, you know, speaking of callers, I wanted to point out to the caller who asked about casseroles that freeze well that under the casserole directory, there's a whole category. She can just look at it.
My favorite part, that part of the book at the end where it's
which ones?
Yeah.
But, you know, I would say that being able to engage with people, whatever your career, is the very best part of it. When I teach, I get feedback, not to make a bad pun, but, you know, you understand where the trends are. Are people looking for gluten-free every day of the year or just some days of the year? Is our tapas always going to be popular? You know, or do we need to make more dishes with beans and grains? I think that people asking questions in your classes, responding to foods, is the very best way for someone who writes cookbooks, who writes about food, maybe online as a blogger or in another fashion, to get to the heart of what people really want. And I take my classes very seriously. I take comments on my blog seriously. And it's just a great learning experience on both sides.
In the casseroles that freeze well section of the casserole directory of the book, there are 11 recipes, and the book would make a great go-along gift
at that
shower. Because I still think that's such a cool idea, the stock-to-freezer shower. I think that's awesome.
Yes. You can, well, I'll tell you something else you can do with this book that I have found works out well. We've been overnight guests at several friends' homes excuse me, this fall, and I've taken a pretty casserole dish and put a casserole book in it. And it was a very nice host and hostess gift.
That's a great idea. Melissa in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. I totally spaced off the breadcrumb recipe, so I would love for you to say how to make easy breadcrumbs again. But I also want to say thank you for pushing white sauces are easy, because you can make them so flavorful, and they're so easy to do, and they're so easy gluten-free, too, to make a white sauce, because I have a gluten-free daughter, and it's just wonderful. But I totally missed how to make my breadcrumbs.
Okay.
Well, I'd be happy to repeat it for you. It only takes about 30 seconds. So let's say you have some leftover bread. It can be a baguette or a crusty whole wheat loaf. I usually take the tough crust off and then tear it into pieces, and I put it in the food processor with the metal blade and pulse it not more than 5 or 6 times till I have it the size of maybe tack heads. And then depending on what you want to use, you can use just about a tablespoon of oil per half cup to cup of crumbs, and or you can use the same amount of butter. You heat it up over moderate heat, and when it's bubbling and hot, whether it's the butter or the oil, you add the crumbs, take a wooden spoon, stir them, and within a matter of minutes, they'll become golden. You take them out. You can drain them on paper towels, and you can make those a day ahead if you want for a casserole, because they will reheat when you put them on top of one and it's in the oven.
Thanks, Melissa, for that call. If anybody else out there has a question or comment for my guest, Betty Rossbottom, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, just for folks who just might be tuning in, the title of the book, Sunday Casseroles, Complete Comfort in One Dish, should not be necessarily confused with the idea that these recipes are only fit for a Sunday in that they all take a long time.
You're absolutely right. We say Sunday because that's when people have a little bit of extra time sometimes to cook, and you might want to make a casserole, eat part of it, freeze it, or make two, make one for now, one for later. But these casseroles are good any day of the week. And what I'm happiest about in this book is that I think all these casseroles would taste just as good as a family meal as they would for company. I think you can interchange them as much as you like.
In the seafood section, there's a great recipe for shrimp baked in coconut and lime rice. And the trick
there.
And
did you see the picture?
Oh, my, yes. Yes, it's gorgeous. Oh, by the way, all the photographs in the book are absolutely beautiful. They're all full color, right?
Yeah. Yes, they're gorgeous.
Yeah. Now, they make me hungry. I've tried to push the book away.
Well, the recipe you just mentioned is absolutely glorious and looks like it takes far more effort to put together than it does. And what it is we take coconut milk, which you can find at almost any grocery store. It's not a hard-to-find ingredient. We simmer it with some lemongrass and other Southeast Asian flavorings. And I put long-grain rice, it can be jasmine, basmati, in a casserole dish. Pour that liquid over it, let it bake in the oven, usually covered, and then, because shrimp don't need as long a time in the oven as rice would, the last 10 minutes of the cooking, you stir in some nice large shrimp, and they finish their cooking, the rice finishes its cooking, and you top it with some fresh diced mango, crushed peanuts, and cilantro, and a little bit of lime peel. It's a really beautiful dish and not at all hard to make. And I think it would be good for family or for special guests you're having coming over.
Right. That's definitely one of those recipes where you want to read through the whole thing first. Make sure that you're not just dumping it all in together. There is a trick, and that's waiting to put the shrimp in.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I know. But that's pretty clearly delineated in the in the steps, because each recipe is numbered in by steps.
Exactly. We have an email from Sarah. She writes, "When I think casserole, I think of my mom making green bean casserole, the typical recipe that comes on the box of crunchies."
I love it that she called in and that she wrote in, because I know that recipe so well. I made that so many times when I was a young bride. And I even mention it in the introduction to the book. And that was a recipe where you bought canned fried onions in a tin. Mm-hmm. And you bought green beans that were frozen. And you could use some mushroom soup or other soup. You put it together. And then you put the onions on top. And I made it countless times. And I have to confess, I still love it.
Well, but she wondered if you have a way to spice it up now.
Well, it's pretty spicy as it is, but what I would do is what I mentioned for the lady who called in about the chicken recipe with the can of cream of chicken soup. Instead of the soup, the mushroom soup, I would make a white sauce. Again, a couple tablespoons of butter, a couple tablespoons of flour, 1.5 to 2 cups of milk. Make it the classic way. And then if you wanted to season it up, put herbs that you like in it. I think rosemary would be good today, and it's not in the original mushroom soup. You could also sauté some mushrooms and put it in your white sauce, and then just use wonderful fresh green beans that you blanch off for 4 to 5 minutes. And, you know, you can put breadcrumbs on top. I don't know that I would go to the effort to fry the onions. I think I'd probably just put great breadcrumbs on top that were homemade, and I think you would end up with a fabulous dish. Something else that's quite good as a topping for casseroles is nuts. I think you might have heard me mention crushed peanuts in that Southeast shrimp and rice dish. In this dish, you know, if you wanted to jazz it up a little bit, you could put breadcrumbs and put some chopped walnuts in. That would be delicious with it.
You mention along the lines of that recipe when you refer to it in your introduction that you don't use any soups in any of the casseroles. The closest you come is broths.
Broth. We use chicken broth, beef broth, which I use all the time in my cooking and feel good about. You can even buy organic ones if that is something you want to do. But I don't use any cream soups because I feel like they're very high in sodium. And it's as the caller who mentioned earlier said, white sauce is really an easy thing to make, you know. And in every recipe, I could have had one basic white sauce, but I wanted the steps for each white sauce to be in each recipe. So it's repeated everywhere so that you will know you need exactly this amount of butter or oil. You need exactly this amount of flour. This is how long you cook it. This is why you cook it. Then you add the liquid and voila, you've got your sauce.
There are several recipes for individual servings in the book. That seems to me very different from other, you know, casserole recipes in general. People may not think of them that way, but you have lots of recipes for it, and I think it's great.
Well, I love, I bet a number of the people listening in today have creme brulee dishes, because creme brulee is just about the most popular dessert in America. And you can take your creme brulee dishes and make individual casseroles. Two that come to mind in the book are broccoli and cauliflower florets, which are blanched, that is, cooked just until they're tender. They're alternated so that their green and white colors look great in the dish. And you make a white sauce with some cheddar cheese and mustard, pour it on top, and put breadcrumbs. One that's a little bit more involved, but it's absolutely one of my favorite recipes and one of my students' favorite recipes, is you take those same individual dishes, like creme brulee dishes, or 1 cup ramekins. Mm-hmm. You put saffron rice, that's rice cooked with a hint of saffron, and then you make piperade, which is a Basque dish, the southern part of French near the Spanish border. And that's just simply sautéed red peppers, onions, tomatoes, a little bit of garlic, cayenne pepper. You put that on top, and then you nestle scallops that have some smoked paprika and cumin on them. Put it all in the oven at one time. Comes out as individual dishes. It's absolutely glorious. It's a beautiful dish. And again, cooked so that each person gets its own little cassolet.
Betty Rossbottom, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure, and it's always wonderful to talk to people from Columbus. I'll be back in November for Culinary Capers and teaching at Seasoned Farmhouse. And thank you so much, Anne, for having me on. It's a pleasure.
If you want to hear more about Betty Rossbottom, stay tuned. We have more information on how you can support our station as well. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And here's All Things Considered host Marilyn Smith and WOSU restaurant reviewer and former teacher for Betty Rossbottom, Rich Terapak.